So you could have like the greatest meta ad creative in the entire world. Flawless copy, an unlimited budget.
Oh, absolutely. The dream setup.
Right. But if your tracking pixel takes, say, 5 seconds to fire because it was installed wrong, you are just flying completely
Yeah,
blind.
you're essentially just setting money on fire at that point.
Exactly. Picture this scenario. You're
Yeah.
running this massive campaign, right? But you're stuck waiting in a like a 2 week developer sprint queue.
The dreaded dev queue.
Yeah. Just to get one simple conversion pixel placed on your website. I mean, every single day that passes is lost optimization data.
That's really the defining bottleneck for mid-level performance
Yeah,
marketers.
it really
You
is.
build up all this strategic momentum, right? And then the execution just grinds to an absolute halt because, well, you're still entirely dependent on a developer to manually edit the website source code.
You're kept in the passenger seat.
Exactly. You're in the
Right.
passenger seat of your own analytics process.
Well, today we are taking you out of that passenger seat.
Love that.
This deep dive is basically the ultimate shortcut to independence for you. We are looking at the foundational source material on Google Tag Manager, or GTM, and we're going to extract the exact technical architecture you need.
Right, so you can actually own your own tracking, your tagging, your entire analytics implementation.
Yes. Because the core promise of GTM is just profound, right? You write the code once, you install it, and you literally never have to touch the website source files ever again.
It's a game changer. I mean, every new GA4 event, every Google Ads conversion, every Meta remarketing pixel, it's all handled entirely inside a visual interface.
But to get to that level of control, we really have to establish the basic architecture first,
Yeah.
starting with, the account and the container.
Right, because the structural hierarchy is where your data governance actually begins.
To break that down for us.
Sure, so at the top level, you have the account. And Google recommends exactly one GTM account per company.
Just one.
Just one. The account acts purely as an organizational layer for user permissions. You know, who can view, who can edit, who can publish.
Okay, so if that's just for organization, where does the actual work happen?
The actual deployment unit, the place where you're building things, that's the container.
Okay, now I've seen agency setups where they take like five different client websites and they just cram them all into one massive container.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no.
Just because they think, oh, it's easier to manage from a single dashboard. Why is that such a disaster waiting to happen?
That setup is a fast track to cross-domain data leakage and, frankly, absolute permission nightmares.
Because it's all tangled up together.
Exactly. The strict rule is one container per website or application, period. If you mix multiple domains into a single container, every tag and trigger you build applies globally.
Oh, wow. Unless you manually filter every single one.
Yes, unless you aggressively filter everything. So one
Yeah.
mistake and you are accidentally firing client A's purchase pixel on client B's website.
That would be a very uncomfortable client meeting.
Very. By assigning a unique container ID, you know, that string that starts with GTM dash, and then some numbers and letters to a specific top-level domain, you isolate the environment. You protect the data integrity.
Okay, so that brings us to honestly the most critical part of this entire deep dive, the installation mandate.
Yes, the two-snippet rule.
Right. To link that container to the website, GTM gives you two specific blocks of code. And the sources are incredibly rigid about this. Both snippets have to be present on every single page.
Every single page, no exceptions.
So the first snippet is JavaScript, and it has to go as high up in the HTML head tag as possible.
And that placement is mandatory, by the way, not advisory. It really needs to load before your CSS and before any other scripts.
Okay, and the second snippet is an iframe, and it's wrapped in a NoScript tag.
Yeah.
And that one must be placed immediately after the opening body tag.
Right.
So I want to frame this using an analogy because I think visualizing the HTML structure really helps here.
Go for it.
It's like installing a security camera system in a retail store, right? Putting that JavaScript high up in the head tag is the equivalent of turning on the cameras before you unlock the front doors.
Oh, I like that.
Right. You see every single person who walks in.
That captures the mechanics perfectly. You want the measurement system fully initialized before the user can even interact with the environment.
But wait, I have to push back here for a second.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because I know a lot of performance marketers who have had developers actively fight them on this exact thing.
Oh, all the time.
Developers are obsessed with, core web vitals and site speed scores. They always want to take that GTM JavaScript snippet and shove it all the way down into the footer so that the visual elements of the page load faster.
The classic dev pushback.
So are you saying that prioritizing site speed in that way actually breaks our marketing data? Like, how does placing it lower in the code cause a real issue?
It causes a massive issue.
But the modern web is pretty smart, right? Doesn't the browser just sort of figure out what we're trying to do?
No, browsers don't guess intentions. They parse HTML synchronously, meaning strictly from top to bottom.
Top to bottom, okay.
So if your developer forces the GTM script into the footer, the browser renders the visual page elements, okay. You know, the images, the text, the buttons, before it ever even reads the GTM code.
So the store is open, but the cameras are still off.
Exactly. A user lands on the page, the add to cart button renders instantly, and the user clicks it. But because the GTM code in the footer hasn't executed yet,
GTM isn't even listening yet.
Right. GTM is blind to it. The interaction just vanishes into the ether. We call these silent timing failures.
That sounds terrifying for analytics.
It is. GTM won't give you a validation error for this. The tag might eventually fire on a basic page load, sure, but capturing those immediate user interactions, the clicks, the form submissions, it becomes completely unreliable.
Wow. Silent failures are probably the most dangerous words in analytics. You might think your meta campaign is underperforming, but really your tracking is just loading too slowly to capture the actual conversions.
Exactly. You're blaming the ads when the architecture is broken.
Okay, so let's look at the second snippet now. The NoScript tag in the body. It literally says NoScript, which implies it's a fallback for browsers that have JavaScript turned off.
That's right.
But, I mean, in 2026, who is actually browsing the modern web without JavaScript? Can't we just skip that piece of code and save some space?
No, definitely do not skip it. Omitting that piece of code leaves a massive blind spot in your measurement coverage.
Really? How so?
Well, the NoScript tag functions as an iframe, which is essentially a tiny invisible window embedded right on your page.
Okay.
If a browser completely blocks JavaScript, and this happens more than you'd think, whether due to strict privacy extensions, heavy corporate firewalls, or certain mobile environments, that iframe acts as your fallback.
Oh, I see.
It pings Google servers with basic hit data using what is essentially an invisible image pixel.
So it's not just for people using, like, legacy web browsers from the 1990s.
Not at all. It also captures interactions from various bots and web crawlers,
yeah.
Right? And you might need to account for those in your server-side tracking or technical SEO audits.
Right, of course.
If you skip the NoScript tag, those specific users produce absolutely zero tracking data. They could navigate your site, they could view products, and your analytics would be entirely blind to the activity. Both snippets are fundamental.
Okay, so the architecture is in place. The security cameras are on before the door is open. The fallback systems are active.
Check, check, and check.
But how does GTM actually process the interactions it's observing? Like, how does it know when to send data to Facebook versus when to send it to Google Analytics?
Okay. So everything inside Google Tag Manager operates on a strict unidirectional causal chain.
Unidirectional, so it only flows one way.
Exactly. It always flows in three distinct steps. Variables to triggers to tags. Understanding how these three elements interact, that is the key to mastering the whole platform.
Let's break down the mechanics of each of those steps.
Sure. So the flow begins with variables. Variables supply values by constantly asking, what data is available right now?
What kind of data are we talking about?
For instance, what is the exact URL of the page the user is viewing? Or what is the specific HTML ID of the form they just clicked submit on?
Okay, so they are essentially data scrapers. They pull context directly from the page.
Yes. Then that context moves to the next step, the triggers. Triggers act as the filter.
So they sort through what the variable found.
Right. They evaluate the data gathered by the variables against specific conditions. So a trigger asks, does this interaction meet the criteria we defined?
Give me an example of a criteria.
Like, does the page URL contain the string /checkout?
Okay. And if the answer is yes.
Then the trigger fires, and that activates the final step, which is the tag. Tags execute the action.
The actual payload.
Exactly. They dictate what actually happens, like sending the purchase total and the transaction ID directly to your metapixel.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, the chain never moves backward. The variable feeds the trigger, and the trigger fires the tag.
I think of this causal chain like a bouncer at a highly exclusive nightclub.
Oh, here we go. I love your analogies.
Think about it. The variable is the physical act of checking the ID, right? Looking at the driver's license to gather the data about the person's age.
Right.
Then the trigger is the nightclub's strict policy. Is this person over 21? The bouncer evaluates the data on the ID against that rule.
Yep.
And the tag is the final action, unhooking the velvet rope and actually transmitting that person into the club.
That analogy perfectly illustrates the underlying dependency. And it also highlights a universal rule in GTM. A tag without a trigger is completely useless.
Right, because a tag with no trigger is a bouncer with no rules. They just stand at the door forever doing absolutely nothing.
Exactly. You could spend an entire hour perfectly configuring this complex Google Ads conversion tag, linking all the dynamic revenue values, but if you don't assign a trigger to it, it just sits dormant in your container.
It never fires.
Never. But sometimes, you know, you need a rule that simply lets everyone in.
The ultimate VIP list.
Yes. In GTM, that is the built-in all pages trigger. It is a baseline page view trigger with zero filter conditions. Every single time a page loads, the evaluation instantly returns true.
So you'd use that for the stuff that needs to be everywhere.
Exactly. You use the all pages trigger for your foundational scripts, things like your main GA4 configuration tag or your base metapixel code. Those absolutely must execute on every single URL across your domain before any specific events can be tracked.
Okay, so if variables are the foundation of this whole decision-making process, like if reading the ID is the mandatory first step before the bouncer can do anything, where do we actually get these variables?
That's a great question.
Are performance marketers expected to sit down and write custom JavaScript just to scrape data off their web pages? Because that defeats the whole purpose of avoiding the dev queue.
Fortunately, no. To prevent marketers from having to become front-end developers, Google built over 40 pre-configured variables directly into the platform.
Over 40?
Yep, and they are categorized intuitively. You have click variables, which can extract the click URL or the click text from a button.
Okay. That's handy.
You have form variables to grab the form ID or form classes. You have page variables to read the page path or the referrer.
I mean, that sounds like a massive shortcut. Having those data points readily available must save hours and hours of custom coding.
Oh, it is incredibly powerful. But, and this is a big, but it comes with a massive trap.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. This specific quirk catches almost every new performance marketer, and honestly, even seasoned professionals occasionally forget it.
What is it?
Those 40-plus built-in variables. Google disables almost all of them by default.
Wait, why? Why would Google spend the engineering resources to build 40 highly useful data extraction tools and then just hide them right out of the box?
It comes back to what we discussed earlier with the developers. Site speed and payload optimization.
Ah, always back to site speed.
Always. A variable is essentially a miniature script that constantly scrapes the document object model, the DOM, looking for specific interactions.
So it's constantly scanning.
Right. If GTM enabled all 40 variables on every single page load, it would create a massive performance bottleneck. Your e-commerce site would slow to an absolute crawl because the browser would be wasting resources analyzing elements you aren't even trying to track.
So Google keeps them disabled just to keep the container lightweight.
Precisely.
Okay, that makes logical sense from an engineering perspective. But let's look at this from the marketer's perspective for a second.
Sure.
Let's say I am rushing to set up tracking for outbound link clicks on a new affiliate blog post, right? I create a new trigger. In the configuration, I set a rule that says, fire when the click URL contains /affiliate offer.
Sounds like a standard setup.
But I never explicitly went into the variables menu to actually turn the click URL variable on.
Oh boy.
What happens? Does the interface give me a warning? Does it highlight the trigger in bright red and say, error, you are trying to evaluate a variable that is turned off?
There is zero warning in the interface.
You're kidding.
Nope. It is another silent failure. But this time it happens entirely within the platform's logic.
Yeah.
If you reference a built-in variable and a trigger before enabling it, the underlying JavaScript just evaluates that variable as undefined.
Wait, so my trigger rule essentially becomes, does undefined contain the text /affiliate offer?
Precisely. And the logic evaluates to false every single time.
Because undefined doesn't contain anything.
Right. The trigger never matches, the tag never executes, and you launch your campaign thinking your tracking is flawless, only to find absolutely zero outbound clicks recorded in your analytics.
That is incredibly subtle and honestly punishing. You built the logic perfectly, the rule makes absolute sense, but the underlying data feed was just unplugged.
Yep. The bouncer was checking a blank ID card.
The takeaway for you listening is crystal clear. Always audit and enable your required built-in variables under the variables configuration menu before you ever start building the triggers that rely on them.
It is a critical sequence. Enable the data source, build the filter, then execute the action.
So this raises a massive operational question then. If GTM doesn't warn you about structural logic errors, and we know silent failures are lurking in snippet placement and variable configuration, how can you possibly trust your setup?
You definitely shouldn't just trust it blindly.
Right. You can't just hit the publish button, push a broken container to a high-traffic e-commerce environment, and hope for the best.
Hope is not a strategy in performance marketing. You rely on preview mode.
Preview mode?
Yes. It is the ultimate QA environment, and it's built directly into the platform. Before you publish any changes, you click the preview button, which launches a tool called Tag Assistant.
Walk us through what actually happens when you launch Tag Assistant.
So you enter your website's URL into the prompt, and it opens your site in a new browser window, simulating the live environment.
Okay.
But behind the scenes, GTM is exposing its entire decision-making process. As you interact with the page, as you click buttons, scroll around, submit forms, Tag Assistant provides this live debug panel.
And what are we looking for in that panel?
The most important feature is how it strictly categorizes your tags into two visual lists. You have tags fired and tags not fired.
Okay, so you mentioned that tags fired list. I imagine that list becomes completely useless very quickly if your tags aren't named properly.
Like, you have no idea.
Let's say I inherit an ad account, right? Spending $50,000 a month. I open up Tag Assistant to audit the tracking. I make a test purchase. And in the tags fired column, I see 50 different items.
A nightmare scenario.
One is named tag one. Another is test tag final. Another is copy of GA4 pixel.
Please stop. You're stressing me out.
If I see that kind of naming structure, how do I actually read the debug panel without losing my mind?
You can't. A container with freeform naming conventions creates complete diagnostic paralysis.
Diagnostic paralysis?
Yeah. When a tag fails, or when you are auditing an inherited account like that, you have to individually click into every single poorly named tag, review its variables, and reverse engineer its triggers just to figure out what it was supposed to do in the first place.
Nobody has time for that.
No. And this environment breeds what we call tag bloat.
What exactly is tag bloat?
It is when marketers are too terrified to delete old tags because they have no idea what they do. So they just layer new, redundant tags right on top of the old ones.
Oh, wow. So the container gets heavier and heavier.
Exactly. The container grows massive, page load speeds totally tank, and your data gets duplicated. To solve this, the industry relies on a strict structural naming convention.
And what is that convention?
The standard framework is three parts. Platform-event-audience.
Platform-event-audience. Provide a concrete example of how that transforms the debug panel.
Let's apply it to our baseline analytics. Instead of calling your tag Google Analytics Base Setup, you name it. GA4-PageView-AllUsers.
Oh, that immediately changes how you process the information.
Right. Or consider an e-commerce scenario for paid social. Instead of naming it Meta Purchase Pixel 2, it becomes Meta-Purchase-Purchasers.
The power of that format is that it makes the container self-documenting.
Exactly. Self-documenting.
At a single glance, without expanding any menus, any collaborator knows the three critical components of the architecture. The platform tells you what tool is receiving the data, the event tells you what specific action triggered the data, and the audience tells you whose behavioral subset is being tracked.
And you can apply this exact same discipline to your triggers, too. Instead of naming a trigger button click, you name it, click dash output affiliate links dash all users.
That is so clean.
When your debug panel is populated with items following that strict convention, a quarterly audit takes hours instead of weeks, and handovers between agency partners become totally seamless.
Okay, let's bring all of this architectural theory together. We have covered the fundamental roadmap for freeing yourself from the developer queue and actually taking ownership of your tracking.
The keys to the kingdom.
First, the installation mandate. Respect the synchronous nature of the web. JavaScript goes high in the head to turn the cameras on early, and the NoScript iframe goes in the body to catch the edge cases. Prioritize tracking integrity over raw speed scores.
Absolutely.
Second, the causal chain. Rely on that bouncer analogy. Variables check the data, triggers enforce the rule, tags execute the action.
One-way street.
Third, bypass the silent failure trap. Remember that DOM scraping is heavy, so Google disables your built-in variables by default. Turn them on before you try to reference them, or you will be evaluating against undefined forever.
The most common mistake.
Fourth, QA your work. Rely heavily on preview mode to divide the world into tags fired and tags not fired.
Never publish blindly.
And finally, govern your data. Strictly implement the platform-event-audience naming convention. Prevent tag bloat and make your debug panels instantly readable.
That is the complete technical foundation. But, you know, the source material contains a really critical note about the future of Google Tag Manager.
Oh.
Yeah, and it indicates a massive shift in how much control we actually retain moving forward.
The platforms are constantly evolving. What specific change is coming?
Well, starting April 10th, 2025, GTM is fundamentally altering its behavior regarding Google's proprietary ecosystem.
Okay, how so?
If your container includes Google Ads conversion tags or floodlight tags, which the conversion tracking system for Campaign Manager 360 GPM will automatically load a foundational Google tag behind the scenes without you manually configuring the causal chain.
Wait. We just spent this entire deep dive establishing that GTM relies on strict manual logic.
Yeah.
You build the variable, you define the trigger, you fire the tag. A tag without a trigger does nothing. And now Google is announcing that they are just going to auto-inject scripts based on the presence of other tags.
Yes. Google is aggressively centralizing its tracking architecture under the hood. They are recommending that marketers explicitly add this new Google tag using an initialization all pages trigger to maintain control.
And if you don't?
If you don't, the system will just automate it for you to ensure their advertising platforms receive data.
I mean, that is a staggering philosophical shift. GTM was built as a neutral tag management system. It was a blank slate where you controlled every single byte of code that executed on your domain.
It really was.
This automation essentially privileges Google's ad platforms over your explicit structural commands.
It definitely does.
This raises massive questions for performance marketers who care deeply about the architecture we just discussed. If GTM is injecting automated scripts to support Google Ads, how does that impact our meticulous page load speed testing?
It complicates it for sure.
When a developer audits the network requests and sees a Google script firing that isn't explicitly listed in the container interface, how do we even troubleshoot that?
The QA process will just have to evolve. You will need to monitor network requests in your browser's developer tools, not just rely on the tags fired list in Tag Assistant, because automated behaviors might occur completely outside your explicit configuration.
Wow.
The tools are getting smarter, but they're also becoming a lot more opaque.
The era of total manual control might be shifting, which honestly means your fundamental understanding of the architecture has never been more critical. You wanted independence from the dev queue, and mastering GTM provides exactly that. But with that independence comes the absolute responsibility to govern your data properly, anticipate these automated behaviors, and structure your environment for clarity.
You have to know the rules before the system starts breaking them for you.
Exactly. So, your mission for today. Log into your GTM account and open up a blank staging container. Do not touch your live production environment yet.
Please don't.
Follow the framework we laid out today. Verify your snippet placement, manually enable your click variables, build a strictly named test tag, and watch the exact moment it jumps from tags not fired to tags fired in preview mode.
That's the light bulb moment.
You have the blueprint. Now it's time to build. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.